good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Kelvin Butenhoff coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text, same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very excited to have our guests join us live in studio. Karen Rilke is here with the Honor Flight. Good morning, Karen. You may want to pull that mic up just a little bit.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
You have been involved with Honor Flight for a very long time.
I have. I started in 2014, but our organization started in 2008. So there was plenty of history before I came along as well.
And for those who don't know, and I think I would like to think that most people by now are familiar with Honor Flights, but what was the genesis of this idea?
Sure. So the Honor Flight movement started in 2006 when a physician's assistant in Ohio realized that his World War II vet patients did not have the means physically or financially to see the new, brand new at that time, World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. So he had a friend who was a private pilot, and they started flying a couple vets at a time, all expenses paid, to see their memorial. And that really was the genesis of the movement. And then our hub here in Southeast Wisconsin started in 2008, and the first flight of Milwaukee vets was November of 2008.
Wow. Now, it started with World War II vets.
It did.
Most of them are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Korean War and Vietnam veterans.
That's correct. It's really an opportunity for our oldest vets to get the day of honor and gratitude that they really didn't get. You know, we've all seen the ticker tape parade footage from World War II, even though that wasn't the reality for most World War II vets. And then the Korean vets tell me that they really came home to silence. People weren't very interested, didn't know why we were there, didn't understand why they had been there. And then I think many of us know what the reception that our Vietnam vets received.
They were treated so terribly.
They were, yeah. And really have carried that hurt for so long. And this is really a day of closure, of joy, of a chance for the community to show gratitude. And really their moment of redemption. So we're thrilled to take thousands of our Vietnam vets to Washington, D.C. as well.
I was speaking to you, Karen, before we got on air, and I have a small connection to Honor Flight. I used to work at a barbershop called Jose's Barber Extraordinaire, and Jose was himself a Korean War vet, and he took an Honor Flight. And when I mentioned it to you, you were like, Jose? And for his sons, that will mean so much because he was such a unique figure, but more so the fact that he came back beaming, just to feel that pride, to feel that recognition, to feel that connection to, you know, something was so long ago that it's when I hear Honor Flight, I just think of throngs of people being excited for these individuals who gave so much to us. And it means so much that you're still doing it. And you even said, like, you've worked with 10,000 vets, but you remember Jose. And that means the world to me as someone who cared very much about him.
He was wonderful. And really, it's a joy for us to give these vets not only a chance to spend the day with other vets, but the chance to have some pride in their service. I hear from the sons and daughters that sometimes accompany their vet on a flight that, my dad never wore a Vietnam vet hat. He didn't have anything that said he was a vet. He didn't identify really as a veteran, even though he was one, because he had really locked that part of his life away.
Yeah.
And it's such an overwhelming joy for us to have these vets finally proud again and willing to tell people that they served and have others thank them for what they did so long ago.
I feel like that's something that, I mean, I can't speak from experience, but, you know, there's a lot of men out there who fought in World War II, they came home to the ticker tape parades, but then it was time for real life to take on. And we weren't asking questions. They weren't telling stories. And this part of history has been, some parts have been lost because they're just like, I don't talk about that. I got things to do. I got bills to pay, a family to feed. And to see these, I feel like as they got older and now in today's day and age, we're far more receptive to these stories. And we want to hear from what they experienced, especially just to let it out as maybe a little bit of therapy as well.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons that we We require our guardians who accompany the vets to be a minimum of 15 years younger than the vet they accompany, yeah. is so those stories will live on. So these people hear the stories of their, sometimes their dad or their grandpa or their grandmother. We have a lot of ladies yeah. that fly with us that served as well to very little fanfare.
Yeah.
And we want those stories to live on. That's incredibly important to us.
And I think too, that we forget so many of these people are so modest and don't feel like they're heroes and yeah. don't necessarily feel like they deserve to be celebrated, but they should be.
Yes. I had a very powerful moment probably 8 years ago or so. I was with two Korean War vets and we went to an interview. And one of the Korean War vets was a Silver Star recipient, had been nominated for the Medal of Honor, but not enough other soldiers survived the battle to corroborate his story.
Oh my.
And then the other veteran had served stateside here in the United States in supply. And after the interview, as we were walking out, the veteran who had served in supply said to the combat veteran, "I'm just honored to be in the same room with you." And I will never forget this. The combat vet pointed right in his face and said, "Don't ever say that again. If you hadn't done your job, I wouldn't be here to tell my story. Your service is just as important as mine is, and you deserve that honor flight just as much as I did." And the veteran in supply started to cry. It was just absolutely incredible. And a beautiful explanation of why we don't care where the veteran served. If you served before June of 1975, active duty, no matter where you were sent, your role was important and it's worthy of being thanked for.
Karen Rilke is our guest and we are talking about honor flights. You just had one honor flight. You have another one coming up in June. Karen, if someone is listening and they are related to a vet who has never taken part,
yes.
what is the process to go about starting?
Well, the first thing to know is the flight is completely free for the veterans. And as of this moment, because of a very generous anonymous donor, the Guardian donation is waived as well. We don't know how long that will last, but veterans can bring a son, daughter, grandchild, grandson with them at no cost right now.
That's wonderful.
It is. So again, if they served active duty in June of 1975 or before, and that's active duty beyond boot camp, they are eligible and they can go to our website, which is starsandstripeshonorflight.org. And there is an online application there for both veteran and guardian. Right now, it's about a year wait, maybe not quite. So the time to get on the list is now.
Yeah, do it now. Yeah. We will include that link in our show notes.
Absolutely.
If you have questions after the show is over, get us about an hour. Greg puts together a really great compilation of every day's show. So go to civicmedia.us and then just click on shows. Go to Matt Nair on Air and everything will be right there with all of the links that you need. What about people who, Karen, are not related to a veteran and they would like to do something? They would like to get involved. What could they do?
So, you know, certainly donations are great. But there's other ways as well. Our flight days, if you've been a part of our homecoming in the evening at Mitchell Airport, it's unforgettable. Mm. And our friends at Mitchell Airport are really amazing hosts and allow us to throw the best party ever 6 times a year. So we'd love to have more members of the community come out to welcome the vets home. It's a great party. Kids are welcome. There's a sign-making station. So kids can make signs that say, "Welcome back, veterans." It's really a great evening. So our next flight is Saturday, June 15th. So you'll want to show up around 7 p.m. at Mitchell Airport. It's a great way to participate. We're pretty full for volunteers at the moment. We have about 250 active volunteers
wow.
that are just spectacular folks. And we don't want to take a bunch more if we can't give them something to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
So certainly really the best way to participate right now is to talk about the program, encourage any vets you see, whether it's at the grocery store for a stranger or somebody in your circle who might be reluctant. Let them know it's a safe day. It's a joyful day. And we'd really love to thank them.
I was lucky enough to go on one a number of years ago when I was working for a different station just to do a story on it. And it is a very long day. Mm-hmm. I give those veterans a lot of credit because they're up early and it lands kind of late after a very busy day.
Yeah.
But coming back to Mitchell, and I had heard about it, you don't appreciate it until you see it, until you walk through lines and lines of smiling, cheering people, and then you get to look at the faces on the veterans as they're coming back, mm-hmm. it will change you. and just make you feel so grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really spectacular. And it's the moment of homecoming that these vets never got. And really when we can replace or maybe amend a bad memory from the past with something positive, it's the best thing ever for us. And we've had vets tell us that for 60 or 50 or 60 years, they had nightmares every night about their service. Oh. And after taking the honor flight, they were gone. And that's the best gift we could possibly get.
That kind of closure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Finally.
And finally being acknowledged.
Yeah.
You know, for so long, they just didn't want to share the memories because they were so painful. So to get those out and get the relief is just so important.
That's wonderful. It is. That's just wonderful. Yeah. You have Greg and I all weepy and stuff.
Welcome to our world. We're weepy all the time.
Oh, God.
We're just on the cliff of...
For the landing, when they come back, mm-hmm. do you need to register on the website to be there, or can you just show up and say, I'm here to... be a part of it.
You can just absolutely show up.
Okay, great.
The only thing we ask is that folks who don't know someone on the flight yeah. allow the veterans' families to have the front rows.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So they can hug their vet and celebrate the welcome home. But no, you do not have to register. You can just show up at 7 p.m. on a flight night and join in the celebration.
That's fantastic.
It really is. And they also do it in Washington, too. When the honor flights land in Washington, it's not necessarily as large of a turnout, but there's still all kinds of people who are there to welcome them when they land. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes. Actually, since you've flown, Jane, we switched airports and we now use Dulles.
Oh.
And Dulles has a volunteer corps that is just spectacular. And when we landed on this past Saturday, they had about 250 people there.
Wow.
And it's all kids. It's, you know, little league teams in uniform. It's, you know, a junior high clarinet band. It's just so spectacular. And the vets just cry their way through.
You have questions, 855-752-4842. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. We're talking about the Honor Flight. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
They came from towns across this land. One last tour, one last stand. Most could walk, some could not.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Galvin Biesenhoff, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Our special guest is Karen Relke with Honor Flight, and we are talking about how they started, why it's important, how you can get involved. If you have a question or a comment, you can always leave it on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, or call us, text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Tom is on the line. Good morning, Tom. Did you have a question for Karen?
Good morning. First off, thank God for you guys, Jane and Greg. Really appreciate you. Karen, this is such a great thing, and it's such an awesome thing that you guys do. I'm going to ask you more of a philosophical question, if I can. The only place where I see that war or that evil is shown is through war. And I'm just wondering, you know, because I'm a peacenik. I'm a person that doesn't believe in war. I'm a person that believes it doesn't solve anything, but I'm just wondering, when you talk to these veterans, do they actually like believe like there's like good and evil, and that's why we have war? I don't know if that's too big of a question to ask or not, but I'm just trying to get a perspective from that.
I think that's a big ask for Karen. I mean, she's dealt with 10,000 veterans, Tom. Over the years?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer as best I can. Really, what we're talking to these vets about is what happened to them on a personal level 50 years ago. So most of these vets were kids. They
were 19 years old.
They were many were drafted, and many did not realize what they were getting into, both as they were sent there, wherever that may have been, and what they were going to experience when they came home. And you know, I think they had seen the their dads and their uncles fighting in World War II, and you know, most would agree, genuinely saving the world at that point. And you know, the ones who enlisted felt like this was their chance to make a difference, and didn't really understand what was going to happen, what they were getting into. And then those that were drafted felt like they had no choice. So, you know, we don't get too philosophical on an honor flight day. What we're most concerned about is trying to heal those old wounds and really acknowledge what these folks went through and the lives that they've built since then.
These aren't the policymakers. They're not. No. They weren't the decision makers. They were doing what they were told to serve their country.
And Tom just texted us as well. He said they are definitely heroes.
So. Yeah, and in many cases, you know, they have a different take on heroism.
Yeah.
You know, a hero can be somebody who, you know, lost their best friend in something, in a place that they didn't want to be, and came home and had people calling them names for even being there when they had no choice, but they still managed to build a life as best they could and get beyond that. So that's heroic as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You need to go. You need to go. You need to get involved. Volunteer, even though you have plenty right now, you're always, volunteers are always welcome. Get involved. Learn more. And as you said, Karen, it's about the individual and helping this individual heal.
It is.
From wounds from a really long time ago.
Yeah, it is. And actually, you know, some of these vets came home and maybe weren't the best dads and or moms. And you know, as they struggled to build their life back. And in some cases, when they fly with a son or a daughter and experience this day together, those bonds are strengthened. And so even if it's not necessarily about their service, sometimes it's about renewing relationships. Sometimes it's about a vet who's 75 and a widower who's lonely and gets to spend a day in the company of other people having a wonderful day. It means different things to different people, but really it's a celebration of some of our oldest vets and what they've brought to their communities and their families.
And I would think, too, the ability to talk to other veterans, because most of us who are not in the military, we have no concept.
No, we have no idea.
None of what they had to deal with and what they were dealing with. And so some of those stories must be so intensely personal. You need someone else who has lived through that.
Yes.
In order to share it.
And many of our Vietnam vets, we've been told, didn't feel welcomed at places like the VFW or the American Legion. So they didn't join those kind of vet schools.
Oh.
So again, not an opportunity to share with other vets until they're surrounded on flight day. And we tend to, where we sit vets next to each other on the plane with their guardians behind them, mm-hmm. so that
they can share.
So that they can share. Yep.
Well, that's something too, is like, you know, growing up, I grew up here in Waukesha, and the VFW on Summit is now gone. And I have to imagine, because of that sort of treatment of the Vietnam vets, they didn't join, so they didn't go to the Vietnam. And now the ones who kept those posts up and running are gone now, and no one's there to take up the mantle and move forward with it. It's really sad, because it was a place where, and even, you know, some places, I don't know, I'm a man, and I feel lucky that I live in a country where I'm not going to be drafted into a military. Mm-hmm. And you can't understand that kind of luck and privilege until you talk to somebody whose number came up on television and they were going, you had no choice because you didn't have the ability to get out. You're going to war. And I think that's another aspect of, like, you know, understanding just that journey and knowing that I don't have to do that anymore. Then that I'm lucky. I didn't want to be in the military. Mm-hmm. My dad was, he didn't want that for me. So we're losing these experiences and we're losing these opportunities to connect. And the VFW thing really hits with me, because I wish there were, like, I see them closing around the area, mm-hmm. and that's really sad.
Well, support is always important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Support is always important. And you can help support the Honor Flight. As Karen mentioned, you can make a donation. You can try and volunteer. You can certainly be there for the welcoming committee at Mitchell International Airport. We will have all the links in our show notes. It takes about an hour after the show to get those posted. So check it out. Everything will be there. Karen Rilke with the Honor Flight. Thank you so very, very much. Memorial Day is this weekend. It's on Monday. That is remembering those who have been lost. The honor flights are to honor those that we still have. Buy a poppy, too.
Correct.
Buy
thank
a poppy.
You so, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely,
of course,
Karen. We will have you back. Stay with us. News is coming up next. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
One more honor to receive. From their country. They talked of war and battles they'd been in, from Normandy to Berlin to the fields of Tianjin. In bodies worn from age, but eyes still so clear, brave tears to flow, remembering those years. Standing at the monuments, saluting straight once more, bronze and granite memories of those who went before. And when the time had come to fly on home again, finally they knew they'd made a difference. Fight for honor one last time, a few more hours.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text at 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Want to thank again our guest in the last half hour, Karen Rilke from Honor Flight. Such a wonderful woman, such a wonderful organization. They do such good things. And you and I both almost completely fell apart.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel the teardrops coming.
It's just so emotional. And it's, if you want to take part in it, I highly, highly encourage you to go to Mitchell Airport and be on the welcoming committee for when they come back. It's really a spectacular thing. So we saw this in the news yesterday, and then we started having an off-air discussion about it that we've decided to bring to you. Just a reminder, also, Corey Hartman, Civic Media's engineer and meteorologist, joining us at 11:50 to talk about the weather that is coming our way. Could see 70-mile-an-hour straight line winds later on today. There's a potential for tornadoes. This is not a joke.
No.
So please stick around for that, and Corey can give us some kind of an idea of what good is going to be coming.
And stay safe. Stay inside. Don't go tempting things.
Well, and I was just talking to one of the folks in the building here, and I understand if you want it, people turn everything off at night.
Yeah.
I always leave my phone on.
Yeah.
But in situations like this, especially when we have severe weather coming in late at night, it's kind of important you have at least one thing on.
Yes.
Because if the siren goes off and you're not in a place where you're going to hear it, right?
I don't understand why you would turn your phone off at night. Like, I understand silent, quiet, vibrate. But turning everything off, that just, you feel disconnected. I feel cut off then at that point.
Or get a weather radio.
Yeah.
Which is a good idea anyway. But Corey Hartman coming up to talk about the weather coming up at 11:50. So anyway, we found this article that New Glarus held the second annual World Euchre Championship last weekend. This was a big event.
And we're not talking about Bob Euchre.
No, Euchre the card game.
Yeah.
There were 62 players last year. This year they had hundreds. They had 170 people signed up. Doubles, they had 260 people with 50 on the waiting list. And so we started talking about card games.
Yeah.
In general.
Uh-huh.
And you said you can't play euchre.
No, I don't know how to. I feel like the So when I think of Wisconsin card games, mm-hmm. I think of Hearts. No, okay. There's actually a bunch. Rummy, Jim and Rummy. Don't know the difference. Don't try to tell me now. I'll never remember. Hearts and Spades. Don't know how to play them. No one's ever taught me.
Okay.
Euchre and Sheep's Head sound like, I've always felt like you need an advanced mechanical engineering degree to play. And Calvin's shaking his head right now. Calvin, you're behind the board right now. I'm talking to a microphone. I think I'm winning this argument. The one that I have any sort of adeptitude.
Ability.
Thank you. Is cribbage.
Okay.
Cribbage, I find fun, but I also find incredibly stressful because you got to find them points.
It's about math.
And if you're not, if you're playing with someone who's a little cutthroat, they're going to take those points that you don't find and you're going to lose double skunk. And I don't like it. And I feel bad for when I'm my wife's teammate in cribbage because I'm like, I'm going to miss points and she's going to look at me and I'm like,
but the only
justified.
But the only way you get better is to keep playing.
Yes, that's why I have an app on my phone where I practice.
Oh.
Yeah, I practice my cribbage game on my phone. And then what I do is I practice counting. And then they'll say like, hey, do you want to count your points? I'm like, yes. And then I'm like, I missed another 15.
So, Calvin, you chimed in when we were kicking this around yesterday before we got on the air. And you were like, I could teach you how to play euchre. No problem.
It's really not that complicated of a game. So euchre, my mom and her brothers and her parents are a big euchre. It's kind of in the family.
Okay.
But I never learned how to play as a kid. I didn't learn until my roommates taught me in college.
Seriously? So no one in your family taught you?
Nope. It was always kind of like grandpa and grandma are playing cards with mom and Uncle Todd.
No, let the old people play.
Mom
and dad speak German. They never taught me.
And then we were sitting around trying to come up with a card game to play. And they're like, well, have you guys ever played euchre? And I'm like, wait, euchre? That's the game my grandparents play. But then I learned how to play. And it's not hard. It's a trick-taking card game, so it's in the same vein as Sheep's Head and Spades and Bridge. From what I hear, it seems like anyone only ever knows how to play one of them.
Yeah.
Not all of them.
Yes.
I know how to play euchre, and that's it. My dad, not obviously, doesn't play euchre with my mom's side of the family because he only knows how to play Sheep's Head.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's like when the Catholics married the Lutherans. Like, you come from a Sheep's Head family? We're a euchre family!
The card games shall never cross.
That's so true. Folks, is there anybody out here, and you can't just say, oh, I can play both. You can sit down to a tournament. Can you play both Sheep's Head and euchre or cribbage and hearts or spades? Like, do you have a vast knowledge of card games, or is Calvin correct? You're like, I could whip anyone's butt in Sheep's Head, but don't ask me to play euchre. I don't know.
Are you an ambidextrous card game player? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We have Sue on the live stream. I played cribbage with my 96-year-old mom all the time. She won way too often, and you better believe she made me pay her the quarter.
Oh, of course. Of course. You pay the piper, friend.
Hey, we're talking big money stakes here. I want my quarter.
Matt from Germantown texts in, let's play cribbage. If you lose, you change my oil. If you win, you teach me how to change my oil. That's not how that works.
That's a win-win for Matt.
That's a win-win for Matt. He gets what he wants no matter what. And if I beat him at cribbage, all I get are some lousy points. This isn't fair.
855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Are you a cribbage household, a euchre household, a Sheep's Head household? Where do you come down on the card game? Nick from Madison is on the line. Good morning, Nick. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Nope. Hello.
Go ahead, Nick.
Hello. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, yes. Here's the thing. You know, I played euchre before, but, you know, I'm a transplant from Illinois. And so the thing
Forgiven.
Is, people in Wisconsin love their euchre. And yes, I'm a Bear fan, and I'm not going to apologize for that. But people in Wisconsin love their euchre, but they refuse to teach it to people because they say it's too complex. So all the times I've learned, I've since forgotten because I didn't play in a long time. And then people won't teach me anymore. So I'm just kind of done with it. I don't know.
All right. I understand that. And that's not just an Illinois thing. I've had the same thing with Sheepshead and Euchre where they're like, it's just, you know, if you didn't learn when you were younger,
you're never going to get it.
Yeah, it's like learning a language, which I disagree with. It's a card game. Just slow down. But also, my dude, Google's free. YouTube's free. You can learn how to play.
But I think, Nick, it brings up, there's like a euchre wall.
Yeah, tear
right?
it down.
Tear down
this euchre wall.
Right,
I don't know why
right,
I'm doing
Nick,
candy.
They're boxing you out of euchre play by just saying, it's too complicated for you. I'm not even going to bother teaching you. That's not fair.
And you become the best euchre player ever. And you tear down their walls with whatever words they use in euchre.
Go get them, Nick. You can learn it.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Let us know. Let us know if you watch it on YouTube and you actually figure it out. And then we can have you come in and play Calvin if you like.
That'd be fun. Oh, my God. Euchre tournament?
There's only 24 cards in a euchre deck. How complicated can it be?
Okay, all right.
You're saying that to me?
All right. No need to get mouthy, sir.
I would say you could play... I think you guys would understand it in 3 or 4 hands of playing where you just show everyone your cards
and
talk,
do it that way.
And like talk through the moves.
Challenge accepted.
Because it's about there's a correct play 80% of the time.
Okay.
So I guess that's probably where the crabbiness for new players comes in is if they're playing with an experienced player and they
You guys know all the
Don't
tricks.
Don't take the right play.
Yeah.
You know all the tricks.
They're bad teachers. They're bad teachers. Tony Zimmerman said on the live stream, he said, I can only play euchre, learned it at a church youth group. But he also added, that was in Ohio. Sheepshead basically doesn't exist in Ohio. I think that's just a Wisconsin thing.
Actually, they play Sheepshead in Minnesota.
Okay. That's not Ohio, though.
No, that's true. But my former father-in-law, Arthur, may he rest in peace, tried to teach me once.
How'd that go?
Once. He started yelling at me in the first 5 minutes. Because that's like, you have tricks in Sheepshead too, right, Calvin?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't understand what a trick was, and I didn't get it. And he lost patience with me in the first 5 minutes, and I started crying, and I walked out, and I never tried to play Sheepshead again.
When you say
he was
trick,
so mad
do you
me.
Mean like pulling a card off from someone's ear going, it was here the whole time?
No, it's a different kind of trick.
We got Matthew Serdell on the live stream, who I believe is Matt from Germantown. I never heard of Sheepshead until I got to Wisconsin. I am from Minnesota.
Interesting.
And Linda made it very simple. Euchre family.
Take your ground.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
Put up your euchre flag or your Sheepshead flag. We want to hear from you. Kurt from Waukesha is on the line. Good morning, Kurt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Yes, we play the combination of euchre, sheepshead, spades, and cribbage.
Oh, my.
In one game?
No, but it's like if we have too many people, we'll play the variations, and then when people rotate in and out.
Gotcha. Okay.
Different games. But Sheepshead, we will play Call Your Ace, Jack of Diamonds, Black Sevens, Six-Handed, Euchre. You know, we play to get into that. And then 500, we all learned as kids from our parents, probably by the age of 5.
Oh, wow.
And the statement was always, the family that plays together stays together.
I don't know. Did you just hear Jane's story about trying to learn Sheepshead from her father-in-law? That doesn't seem like the case.
My former father-in-law.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kurt. Really appreciate you listening. Thank you for calling.
By the way, we just found this out. Matt from Germantown is Matt from Grassroots Germantown. We've talked to him about... Yeah!
Oh,
Matt! Hello, Matt. Let's see here. We got one. It said... A texter from the 608 saying, my grandma screamed at me so frighteningly for stealing tricks, I never learned anything past euchre.
Thank you.
But
that's not the right way to learn.
I know. I totally agree with you. I totally, totally agree with you. You have to, I was having this discussion with a friend of mine. And I think I told you this yesterday. I have a friend who is incredible at explaining things. The moment he has to teach you once you're sitting in the chair It's a nightmare.
Oh, gosh. All patience is gone.
All patience is gone. If you didn't learn it in that first explanation, it's like, it's like, I'm going to start crying.
Is his name Arthur?
How did you know?
Sounds like my former father-in-law. Ben from West Bend is on the line. Ben, we got about 2 minutes left. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. I am an avid sheepset and cribbage player. I haven't played euchre.
And would you think, would you be a good teacher, Ben, to teach someone how to play sheepset, do you think?
Yes and no. I know how to play, but it's something where you have to sit down with other people who are not going to get on you about it, you know, because I played with people before. My dad's former hunt buddies, their one guy was a Mason, and he was a killer when it came to playing sheepset. He would kill you if he did something, stupid, you know?
Yeah, which makes the game so much fun.
Yeah, nothing like stress and high heart rate.
And crying.
Yeah.
At least that was my experience. Thank you so much, Ben. Really appreciate the call. Thank you so much for listening. We are right up against the clock here. We are going to talk weather. We have severe weather coming our way later on today. Corey Hartman will be joining us, our civic media engineer and also a meteorologist, so stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Kelby on the board. You can always join us. Call, text 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We have weather coming our way. Corey Hartman is one of our wonderful engineers here at Civic Media, also a meteorologist. So, Corey, who's going to get it worst? I just checked the radar, actually, and it looks like Stevens Point area just got some pretty heavy stuff going through.
Yeah, I mean, the Stevens Point area's got, some showers, some leftover morning convection here today. But really what our eyes are trained on is what's going to be happening, what's going to be developing down into portions of Iowa and then moving this direction as the day goes on. And the Storm Prediction Center did just update their outlook for today about 10 minutes ago. So this is the very, very latest information. So pretty much the entire civic media coverage area across the state has the chance to see some sort of severe weather today, whether that could be some large hail, whether that's damaging winds or possibly even a tornado. And there's also a threat for some flash flooding because there's a lot of moisture with this as well. So we really have, as I've said before, all cards on the table here today. So here's exactly what's going on in the different regions. So as far as tornadoes are concerned, that is going to be the southwestern portion of the state. So we're really talking from Platteville to Richland Center, maybe up to Toma, maybe up as far north as Eau Claire. And it could stretch a little bit eastward. We could see Madison, Baraboo, and maybe even as far north as Wisconsin Rapids getting into the tornado threat later on today. The large hail is going to stay down in that area as well. But really, everywhere south of about a Wausau to Eau Claire line has a big threat for severe wind today, the straight line winds that push everything over in one direction. And the threat for that, again, is really Eau Claire to Wausau to Green Bay, kind of the Highway 29 there, and south. So really, half of the state has an enhanced threat for those damaging winds today.
Corey, what time are these storms going to be moving in, do you think? Is it going to be late this afternoon? Is this going to happen, around rush hour time or later, do you think?
Right. So we had originally thought we would have a couple of rounds of severe weather today, and fortunately slash unfortunately, that didn't happen, because with no storms happening during the midday today, that gives all the energy for this evening. And so now what we're looking at is that storms will start maybe over by Eau Claire at around 3 or 4 this afternoon. A big wave of storms then pulls in to the area around 7 p.m. tonight. That'll be southwestern portions of Wisconsin, and then track all the way across the state until probably somewhere around 11 p.m. this evening.
Well, and that's what makes it so frightening. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, Corey, before you joined us, and I don't know why I had this in my head. You would always think that tornadoes only happen during the day. That's not even remotely true, and that's what makes them so deadly and so dangerous.
Yeah, storm chasers call 6 p.m. the tea time, the magic time, and that's when the tornadoes seem to be the most prevalent. They can happen any hour of the day or night, but it is usually after 6, 7 o'clock at night that those happen. And of course, you know, we've got more daylight now, but when it happens in February, you know, those tornadoes are mostly at night, can't see them coming.
Yeah.
And so we really have to count on those spotters and chasers out there to tell us what's going on. We will have people across the state watching things. So, and we'll be watching those too.
Is there a way for people to, I mean, I know we've seen signups for taking, you know, measurements on rainfall, but
sure.
In the matter of this with storm watching, is there a place people can go to sign up so they can be a part of that, so they can register information?
Learn more about it. Maybe.
Learn more about it.
Yeah, there's spotter training classes that happen every spring. Okay. I was just going to actually look up and see if the Weather Service in Milwaukee or anywhere had spotter training, you know, going on. It's usually, I think, a little bit earlier in the spring. In fact, let me just,
but you know what,
click on
yeah,
it
go
here.
Ahead.
But yeah, it's
what I'm thinking too, though, Corey, is I don't want people going out there without having any kind of training and just say, I'm going to go be a storm spotter. That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Right,
I saw the movie
right.
Twister. I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I'm qualified now.
Grab your camera and your Camaro and hit the road, and that's all you need. So it looks like the Milwaukee Weather Service office anyway. Their last training session was May 10th.
Okay.
So this does happen earlier in the spring, but every spring it happens, and anyone can sign up. And it lasts about an hour or two.
Okay.
And really tells you what you're actually looking at, so you don't call everything a wall cloud.
It's gonna rain. It's not gonna rain.
Does not teach you how to forecast rain. It teaches you what you're gonna see in the sky when there's a threat for severe weather.
Before we let you go, and thank you so much, yeah, Corey, for helping us out with this. We love hearing from you on the matter, and just in general, you're a great guy. We were talking earlier about the fact that for the first time ever, it was a heavy, dense fog for me coming in this morning, and I saw three
sure.
people using their hazards, not trying to get over, not trying to get out of the way, just driving with their hazards on. And my thought was, oh, they're just trying to be seen. And when we
right.
talked about it, we found out that is like huge no-no, illegal in some states. And we read a tweet from a chief meteorologist who's like, do not do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, don't do this.
Yeah, the bigger problem that we as chasers end up seeing sometimes is that people want to put all sorts of amber and white lights all over their car, and now they're LED, and so you're trying to drive behind them in a blinding rainstorm, and you can't see anything. Everybody's come up on a police car that has the rear lights and they're LED now, and you're blinded,
yep.
right?
Yep. Yep.
Well, try doing that when the winds are blowing 50 and the rain is coming, like you're pouring it out of a boot, and you can't see anything. So we're begging people to not use flashers and things in fog and rain. I mean, yeah, if you're pulled over on the side of the road, maybe, but if you're just tooling down the road, turn them off, please. And you know, make sure your headlights are on though.
Well, and that's what we said too. If you got your hazards on, people don't know if you're stopped. They don't know if you're going to be turning. They don't
right.
know, you know, so yeah, don't do, I can understand the temptation to do that, but that's not the right move.
Yeah.
Or if you're in your Camaro with your camcorder, turn the flashers on so we know that you're crazy.
Corey Hartman, civic media engineer and meteorologist. Thank you so very much, Corey. I know you're going to have a long day and night. We appreciate you making time for us.
Thanks, guys. Stay safe, all right?
You
very much,
as
sir.
Well. News is coming up next. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers for making everything run. Without you, nothing works. And thank you to everyone so very much for calling and texting, and most of all, Listening, it means everything. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Be safe and keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.